This is an ABC podcast.
For copyright reasons, the music has been edited. To hear the full tracks, listen to The J-Files, Thursday nights on Double J, or head to doublej.net.au and click on the track list at the bottom of each episode.
Hey, it's Kaz Tran here. Welcome to The J-Files, the podcast for people who love music. Each episode is like a quick music history lesson. We pick a different artist or band, we look at some of the most important moments in their career, and we celebrate their impact on music, all in less than 30 minutes. In this episode, we're unspooling the rich sonic tapestries of Bon Iver. On your back with the rats
as the stacks you lose. When you dig bones up, you're like looking at all the bones and you have to figure out the story. And it was a lot like that writing the songs, where rather than like coming from a conscious place and like, I want to write about this, it didn't really work for me, or it doesn't work for me. Like writing songs in a kind of a traditional way for me is sort of, I never was as good at it as other people were. So this is my way to, this band, I guess, is sort of my way to do my own thing, like the excavation process, I guess.
The music of Bon Iver conjures up images of wintry isolation and finding solace and redemption through nature, all revolving around the aching and angelic voice of Justin Vernon. Come on, skinny love, just let's sing it. Pour a little salt, we will never
hear. My.
That's the first song that caught our attention and introduced us to the fragile emotion of Bon Iver in 2007, then a solo vehicle for Vernon's songcraft. Skinny Love was the first single from Bon Iver's debut record, For Emma, Forever Ago. When he made that album, it felt like it was the end of the road for his music career. Little did he know that this song would spark a fire in the hearts of fans around the world and open up a whole new set of creative pathways. This is pouring rain. This is paradise. Before Justin Vernon began committing songs to tape in November 2006, he'd been based in North Carolina, away from his home state of Wisconsin. Weighed down by homesickness as well as a case of mononucleosis and pneumonia, he chose to recuperate in his father's remote hunting cabin out in the woods. But as he told Zanro back in 2008, he had no intention of making an album when he set out for the cabin. Nevertheless, those frosty environs would frame the songs that became For Emma, Forever Ago.
There wasn't a pane of winter that helped me create or anything, but there's definitely a vibe that comes from winter that I think, you know, influenced me a lot.
Do you think that that came after a lot of years as well? I guess being surrounded by that environment constantly, that everything that goes on around you that's associated with winter and the sort of nature that you grew up around?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I grew up around here. It influences me greatly. It influenced me as a young musician, writer, whatever, and it still does.
So did you plan to make an album when you went to live in that cabin?
No, not at all. I thought I'd probably record, but to think that I was going to make an album all by myself would have been way ahead of the curve.
So what kind of gear did you have with you if there was no plans involved? What stuff were you using to record?
Well, I have just like this mobile recording studio kind of set up, but that I've been using it for years and sort of making little adjustments to it over the years. And I just had it with me because I was moving back from North Carolina and I had all my stuff with me in my car. But it stayed in the car for a couple weeks. I'm surprised it didn't get damaged, actually.
Yeah.
But it was just there. It was like an old computer and one Shure SM57 microphone.
So did you just start writing and start making and just start fiddling around, and that's how it all began?
Yeah, basically. I mean, after a couple weeks of just sort of sitting around in the cabin, I think ideas started flowing, and I started building songs. Rather than really writing them, I started building them piece by piece and sort of slowly erecting them as I figured out what they were. It was kind of an interesting process.
So many foreign roads. listened to For Emma Forever Ago, to me, many of these songs aren't conventional songs, especially the way that they begin. They kind of invite you in, and then the song unfolds. There's a lot of, surface sort of noise and sounds that's going around. Was it just finding parts and stitching the songs together as opposed to a kind of more linear beginning, middle, end sort of vibe?
Yeah, it wasn't as linear as I've written in the past. Yeah, every song kind of came differently, and it wasn't very linear in the normal sense. You know, maybe linear in another way of describing how the songs were built. But yeah, it was piece by piece, you know.
The lyrics weren't really written very conventionally either, were they? How did you go about, I guess, kind of fleshing out the words of these songs?
Well, what I would do is that sort of to get away from my sort of conscious energy, I would just sort of sing melodies and build multiple vocal tracks of just sort of vocal sounds. And so it would just be a bunch of different syllables on a track that all matched up together to sound like nothing, like a bunch of A sounds, a bunch of O sounds, a bunch of S sounds, all crammed on top of each other over the same time. And so when I went back to listen to them, it was like listening to eight voices at once singing all different nonsense words. So what I would do is I would listen to that, and I would sort of notate what I thought it sounded like, and each time I would do that, I might get something different, like I might hear something different. And so that's how I would find sort of these internal meanings in the lyrics in the song. Only love is on.
You don't need to know the lovesick backstory to believe that the person you're hearing on Bon Iver's debut has pulled himself through some dark and painful times to reach a level of acceptance and understanding. In doing so, it's helped him create a record that shimmers with a transcendent quality and altered the course of Justin Vernon's life and career. A couple of years after the release of For Emma Forever Ago, when he joined Robbie, Marik and the Doctor on Triple J Brekkie, Vernon was still making sense of that period he lived through.
I mean, it was basically this thing where I moved to North Carolina, and it kind of chewed me up and spit me out, just like I moved there with all my best friends and my bandmates, basically, and all my good friends. We all just like, because we all loved being from Wisconsin, but we needed to do something. Otherwise, we thought we'd stay in Wisconsin our whole life, which isn't necessarily bad or good, but we needed a change. And after a year of being there, I just got really sick. And
got pneumonia?
I got pneumonia and mono. And
what's mono?
It's
glandular fever.
It's glandular fever.
Right.
There you go.
But you get it from pashing. According to Degrassi Junior High, you get it from pashing people.
That's where you get all your medical tips from, isn't it?
But then it basically, the breakup of the band was really, really especially hard on me. And it was just kind of like this. It took away all my confidence and my like sort of self identity, and but it was also this very necessary thing, and so I just kind of like left away from that with just like no idea what was going on.
Unfortunately, it kind of contributes to that romantic notion of the artist having to be tortured before they can release something that's going to be truly great.
I've thought a lot about that this year, and I in a way, I think I've always not believed in it, although it sort of obviously has sort of spun me a little bit. But everybody goes through hard times, and I think that the weird thing is that artists just sort of get known for going through hard times because maybe they have figured out a way to express it, but everybody goes through stuff way worse or you know, relatively just the same. I'm up in the woods, I'm down on my mind, I'm building a still to slow down the time.
Justin Vernon followed up the success of his debut by self-releasing an EP called Blood Bank in 2009, and that's a track from it, Woods, on which Vernon uses autotune to bring about this feeling of disorientation and loneliness. Woods caught the ear of a certain hip-hop innovator, who in turn repurposed it for his song Lost in the World. I'm lost in the world. City, and I'm down for the night, down That's Lost in the World from Kanye West's career-defining My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. The album sampled Vernon, who went on to contribute to further tracks on the record. At the time, it seemed really strange for these two artists to team up, but it seems a bearded indie folk artist from the upper Midwest and a streetwise hip-hop maverick could have a lot more in common than we'd initially think possible, as he told Zan Roe in an exclusive chat at South by Southwest in 2011.
He called me up. Well, we all heard that he wanted to use a sample on his record of our song Woods, and so that was cool to hear. I mean, I've been a big fan of his since his first record, and so I was excited about it, but then it ended up being like a phone call with him. He's just like, yeah, I think we should, you know, work together after we talked a little while and talked about kind of common interests and musical sort of ideology. He was really not far off, you know, like maybe the result of his music and my music is different, but it didn't seem that different, and it just felt like a really easy thing to do, you know. And going out there to Hawaii and stuff was like working, it was definitely working in like a really pro studio with really pro people, but it didn't feel unlike working on the other records I've worked on, you know, genre wise I guess, but it really felt like the same kind of spirit of like the gang's recording. For me, it's just like you're there, there's just a bunch of really talented people who are really nice, all working with a common goal, just make this music as good as you could make it. And I was inspired by Kanye and how he worked and just like how he wanted to perfect everything and just like never give up on a song and sort of follow it through till its like final stages, you know.
I shoot the lights out until it's bright out. Oh, just another lonely night. Are you willing to sacrifice your life?
That's Monster, another track that Justin Vernon contributed vocals to from Kanye West's My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. It was a busy time for Justin and Bon Iver, who were prepping the second album, the self-titled record, which was more full-bodied in sound, more external in focus and vision, and took inspirations from locations further afield than his wintry Wisconsin cabin. Here's more of Justin's chat with Zan at South by Southwest in 2011, the only interview he did at the Austin Music Conference, talking about his fixation on places that ranged from Lisbon, Calgary, Minnesota, as well as the West Australian capital of Perth.
The song, the way it sounds, and where Perth is, I think it's the world's most isolated capital city, and Calgary is another song on the record that's like the isolated capital city, and Wisconsin, where I'm from, is like that. And so the whole record, it starts in Perth, you know, and Perth can be the beginning of stuff. It's like, and for me, Perth is like birth in this record. It's like the chaotic aspect of being born. I don't know, I did feel like a really kind of spiritual connectedness, I guess if I could use those words, to Australia and my whole time there. Kind of, it started over for me, like it was kind of like the first chance I'd had to be out of the States and out of the UK and where all this madness was happening and go to a place where I've really never been before. And it's also this is a weird part of the story, but I was with a really close friend of Heath Ledger's when he died. Really long story. And so I spent 3 days with this person. I didn't know Heath Ledger or anything, but he told, you know, I spent a couple of days with him as he was grieving. And I just got to know this guy's friend who happened to be Heath. And so it's when the riff for that song started to come together. And so there were these images of horse riding and this person's friendship with this other person. And so that's kind of where the record started. And like that transference of being somebody near grieving their, like, such a close friend. And that's kind of where Perth starts from.
Justin Vernon with the backstory behind Perth, the opening track on Bon Iver's self-titled 2011 album. Over the years, Vernon has cemented his connection to Australia, playing shows across the country and even giving us two memorable Live at the Wireless performances. When Bonnie Bear was in the country for Golden Plains in 2012, they dropped into Triple J to perform this great rendition of Calgary.
Don't you cherish me sleep? Never keep your eyelids clear. Hold me for the pops and clicks. I was only for the father's crib.
I know that you played a lot of that kind of way of writing with the first record, you know, focusing on the sounds and, you know, not necessarily just on the meaning of words. How much is the meaning of your lyrics versus the way they sound and the way that you can make them wrap around the music mean to you? I mean, is it a versus, you know, or are they kind of on the same par?
Yeah, they're part of the same coin. I think they're part of the same, like, variable. So something that sounds good, we're gonna, you know, basically I start with the sound and the melody and then kind of figure out what the words are. And the words end up usually, you know, subconsciously or what, consciously, they end up forming into the sounds that were started with and end up having these meanings that are usually surprising to me. You know, I don't know what the songs are about, really. So I get there and then the songs sort of reveal themselves, I guess.
There's also a really great combination of everyday language and really beautiful language, sometimes things that I can't understand on this record. Do you like playing with that and maybe making people work a little harder or just having things just for yourself?
I really like a good lyricist, and you know, I listen to traditional songwriters, or or hip hop people, or whatever it is. You know, everybody has a different kind of thing. But for whatever reason, this Bon Iver thing, which is really not necessarily just me, it's like just a project. You know, it's like become like a way to for me to be like an author or a director of this thing that I'm kind of beside. And so for Bon Iver, it sort of seemed like there's this vagueness to it that I found like a powerful aspect to. And I think on this record, the lyrics, you don't need to hear them or to understand them to get the feeling. But if you want to, you know, I worked really hard on them and like to make them a complete thing. So if you do want to read them, it's still going to be vague, but I think you can definitely draw a lot of things, you know, from them. But you might not know what, you know, I don't even know exactly what's happening all the time, but I know that what each song means to me because of the words. And so it is a vague thing that people can put the pieces together themselves, I guess.
It might be over soon.
Released in 2016, Bon Iver's third studio album was knotty with dense samples and unusual instrumentation, carving out new terrain and bringing new fans to Bon Iver, like UMI frontman and all-round charm magnet, Mr. Tim Rogers. Here's Tim on Liquid Lunch, breaking down some of the curious sounds that caught his ear from 22 A Million.
Boy, oh boy, that Bon Iver tune is baffling and strangely warm and intimate. That Bon Iver tune employs the Jeanette piano. Now, what the Jeanette piano does is there's a magnetic pickup strapped to the metal frame inside of the piano, and there are also microphones in the piano, and those signals run through guitar pedals, which I think include a phaser and a reverb and perhaps a memory man. There's also a vocal mic, something dynamic, normally a Beyer M88, which goes into the TC Helisson processor, which adds harmonies.
22 A Million's textural experiments were the result of Vernon teaming up with engineer Chris Messina, who helped him jimmy up a combination of hardware and software, which allowed them to split and bend voice and instruments. This manipulation of voice and sound won Justin Vernon some unlikely supporters, and he found himself an in-demand collaborator for musicians you might place outside of the Bon Iver wheelhouse. Vernon continued his fruitful partnership with Kanye, and his voice was featured on three tracks on West's 2013 Yeezus album. Vernon then went on to work with Kanye's one-time brother-in-law, Houston rapper Travis Scott. He shared vocal duties on James Blake's I Need a Forest Fire from Blake's 2016 album, The Colour in Anything. And in a collaboration closer to his folk origins, he later contributed to both of Taylor Swift's surprise 2020 albums, Folklore and Evermore. On the back of 22 A Million, Justin Vernon was on a bit of a roll creatively, not only with his extracurricular songwriting, but also with a set of songs that didn't fit on the 22 A Million album sessions.
All my life, I was, ooh, I was
Soundwise, I, really tied together the aesthetic and ideas of each of the albums prior. Recorded over an extended period of time in his home state of Wisconsin and in Texas, Vernon described the album as very much like the most adult record, the most complete and a more honest, generous work than its predecessors. It was also the most collaborative Bon Iver album, as Vernon drew together new players to stitch together its expansive sound. One of those musicians was Y-Oak's Jen Wasner, who caught up with Tim Scheel mid-rehearsal.
As we speak, we just got off stage and I just gobbled down a quick dinner and we're going to head back. And we've been doing 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. every day.
And you're at the ranch, eh?
We're in Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
Okay.
Justin's hometown.
Yeah, right on. And what's, what gets cooked up for dinner? And approximately how many people are kind of pulling around the tables, pulling up the chairs?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. Justin's longtime friend, Andre Chumas, is one of the most incredible chefs I have ever encountered. Any place, restaurant or home, kitchen, she's an incredible cook, and we are very lucky to have her catering our every meal.
I want to ask you, of course, the big question. There's so much I want to ask you, but the big question is, what is Bruce Hornsby like?
I've actually never met Bruce Hornsby.
Oh, no, you didn't cross paths.
But I hope to, because we're hoping that he's going to come to one of our shows. But I hear that he's just one of the sweetest people you'll ever meet.
He seems sweet.
And Sean Carey, who has obviously been in this band almost since its very, very beginning.
Yes.
Has been playing lots of shows with Bruce Hornsby, both, I think, opening for him and also playing as a part of his ensemble. So, yeah, I'm hoping we'll cross that. I have spent a lot of time with Bruce Hornsby's piano part, learning it. So,
Of course.
You know.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. So you essentially need to become Bruce Hornsby for certain sections of the Bon Iver show.
I do. I put on the old Hornsby mask and I just kind of think into character as best as I possibly can.
Another one of the players Justin Vernon worked with on I, was the Nationals' Aaron Dessner. The two musicians have a working relationship that goes back to 2009 when Dessner messaged Vernon on MySpace. They went on to form their own band, Big Red Machine, recording two albums together and drawing in other musicians like Robin Pecknold, Taylor Swift, Sharon Van Etten and Ilse. This willingness to draw upon the songcraft of other players speaks to the communal spirit at the heart of Bon Iver. From its hunting cabin beginnings to a band involving some of music's best and brightest, Bon Iver has taken us along many sonic pathways, pushing out and exploring the expanse between what's human and artificial. The J-Files is a Double J podcast. Make sure you like, follow and share. Our producer is Sam Wicks, with production support from Gab Burke and Phoebe Bennett. Theme music is by Art vs. Science. You can check out Double J anytime on the Triple J app or at doublej.net.au. I'm Kaz Tran. Thanks for listening.